Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's talk a little bit about the AAF, which has gone belly up. And let's welcome aboard Ben Kershaval, CBS Sports AAF reporter, covers college as well. Hey, Ben, Taz and the Moose with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
Yeah, you bet.
You know, Ben, how surprised, maybe you weren't, how surprised were you of what happened earlier this week?
I think it was surprising in that no one really saw this coming. I went and covered a game this weekend down in San Antonio, and by that point, Tom Dundon had already come out publicly once and said, you know, this deal between the NFLPA and the AAF needs to get done quickly, or all options are on the table. One of them is potentially folding the league. But by the weekend, it seemed that storm had sort of passed. There was this idea that maybe they wouldn't even make it to week eight, and you know, here we were playing games. And I was told, you know, teams were booking hotels for the next 3 weeks for practice and travel. Okay, so seems like business kind of picked back up. It's sort of business as usual. And then obviously Monday night, he sort of comes out, Dundon does, and doubles down on that approach. And then, you know, Tuesday, you get the shutdown. And so it was surprising in the sense that, you know, it really did just kind of happen all of a sudden. And then everyone that I spoke to, I mean, everyone was completely in the dark on what he was doing. I mean, general managers didn't know. People in the front office of the AAF didn't know. Coaches didn't know. I mean, every move that Tom Dundon was making, absolutely nobody was clued in on what he was going to do and when he was going to do it. But I think if you look back further, writing was probably on the walls. Pretty much as soon as he came aboard in February, infusing what he said was going to be $250 million into the organization, I think you could start to see traces of remorse within the AAF about bringing him aboard in terms of what his vision for the company was versus the vision of what like Charlie Ebersole or Bill Polian had for it all. And then just the way that he spoke so publicly and candidly about things, it just never felt, even though he put, there was such this huge influx of cash and he was sort of an angel investor in that regard, it was just never quite a fit. It's sort of a square peg in a round hole situation.
Yeah, it definitely came off, Ben, for sure, like a lack of passion on his behalf. You know, that just from reading the stuff, I mean, not knowing these people involved.
Well,
you know.
I mean, I don't know Tom, and I can't speak
right
for him and what is inside his head and what his motives are. So I can't say anything about his passion. I certainly get the impression that he had a very strong vision for what he thought the AAF should be. So I think he had plenty of passion in that regard. I just don't think it ever aligns with anybody else. And then on top of that, when you are a billionaire investor, now you're the control owner of the company, and what you say is the only voice that matters. I mean, not only they called him the chairman of the board. He was the board. He was the only person really making these decisions. So when that's the case, it's sort of your way or the highway. And one way that manifested was the negotiations with the NFLPA, but by no means was that the only factor in this.
Ben, love to get your take, because Moose and I were talking earlier, and I was making a statement about the actual quality of play, of football, of the actual game. I mean, I've watched from the beginning, weeks back of the AAF, probably watched the first 4 or 5 weeks and watched a good amount of games on Saturdays and Sundays. I actually enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't think that – I don't want to sound like I'm not giving them a ringing endorsement from an athletic or football perspective, but it wasn't like – the NFL, it wasn't like great football play, it wasn't great quarterback play, it wasn't great offensive line play, but I got to be honest, I enjoyed the games, I enjoyed the rule play, I enjoyed the athleticism of players, the defenses were great, the hitting, the tackling, the way guys were running the ball. As a whole, I felt like, and people that I was reading stuff on social media or my own personal social media, people seemed like they were enjoying it for the most part. Your stance on that, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I talked to a general manager last night, and we both kind of came to the same conclusion, was that, you know, we felt the system was working.
Yeah.
And if the idea is that you're going to be a development league for the NFL, you want to be able to have guys who will go and play on Sundays, or, you know, at least go and get another shot at maybe being a backup or a contributor in some way. And, you know, you look across the eight teams in the Alliance, and I can start immediately rattling off names of guys on both sides of the ball that I think are going to have a real shot to play. And that is what's, and now, you know, 8 weeks in, the guys who showed up and made a name for themselves, you know, people ask, well, why, you know, shut down now? And that's a whole other conversation. But the guys who made a name for themselves, they're going to get that shot now regardless, right? I mean, the extra few weeks or whatever, barring injury, was not really going to make a difference much on that front. So I do think the system was working in that regard. But, you know, the interesting thing about the whole NFLPA situation and the negotiations there, I mean, that was supposed to be a multi-year thing that was really going to start heating up more in the off season. And the general manager I talked to last night, he's like, yeah, but, you know, it's really more about tethering yourself to the NFL at that point. Because if you bring down practice squad players, you find a way to, you know, work around their futures contracts, and you find a way to insure them if they get hurt, you know, you get past all of those hurdles, maybe marginally you improve your product, right? Because the guys that you have now were practice squad guys or, you know, released. So you're really talking more or less about the same quality of guys. The only difference is in the NFL, you're not getting those reps, right? You might have some potential, but you're not out there giving yourself the chance to show off that ability. So I don't know that in and of itself would have really raised the quality of play, but I think it would have given you the long-term stability that you needed.
Ben, do you think do you think his interest in the league, the investment initially, was on the level? And what I mean by that was, there's some, you know, people that speculated that he wasn't necessarily interested in the AAF, but he was interested in the technology surrounding the AAF betting app. Correct?
That's the rumor. I have been given no reason to believe that.
Okay. So no, you think that when he got into this at 200, when he said he was going to invest $250 million,
yeah, quarter of a billion, yeah,
it had nothing to do with the app. It was all about this league.
That was the indication that I received. No one other than Tom Dundon knows what Tom Dundon is doing. And the reason why I say I have no reason to believe that is one, I've got a couple of denials on the other end, and two, I think there are other factors at play, which namely are the cash flow and the expenses, you know, what the AAF was trying to pay off as far as its vendors were concerned. I mean, Tom was putting in $10 million a week. And I talked to a coach last night, and they said, if you just talk about players' salaries alone, over the basic math says it comes out over the past 7 weeks, it's about $32 million. So that's another, $38 million that had to go somewhere else. So where was it going? And so, you know, those are the paper trails that, you know, it'll be my job and others to sort of follow as this story progresses. But, you know, they had a lot of expenses. And I think from Tom's perspective, you know, he felt like he had a lot of things to pay for. And if you want this to be a cash flow business, well, man, you're not going to get that at least especially right away. So if you sort of put everything together, and some of this is just a lot of dot connecting at this time because everything is still so raw and fresh, but, you know, I don't think the app technology, I don't think it was some grand scheme by Tom Dundon to come in and get this technology and leave. That's intellectual property. I mean, that is a very ironclad asset that if he tried to take, there would be a loss. There'd be litigation over this. I mean, that is a lot of trouble and a lot of money to eat to try to, like, outsmart somebody and take this thing.
No, that's fair. But, Ben, I guess, you know, Taz and I were talking a lot about this yesterday. Then, I mean, you had to have expected early on here to lose money, right? I mean, you mentioned the visions, right, that Dundon had a different vision than Ebersole and Polian. What was the distinct difference in vision that he had when he took majority ownership of this league?
I'm thinking because I'm trying to tell you what I can tell you on the record.
Okay.
So it basically comes down to, I think Tom did not see this as something that would be like maybe like sold later. And I'm kind of using that in a general sense. I think he thought this was something where, because one question I've gotten a lot is, you know, well, where's the revenue coming from? I think that would be Tom's number one question. Let me put it that way, right? So and that makes sense because he's the one infusing this thing with cash, right? He's the one fronting all of this money. So at some point you want to see a return on that investment. And from him, even though he's a billionaire, a quarter of a billion dollars is still a quarter of a billion dollars. So I think his concern was more about, okay, where are we going to get the revenue from? You know, what are the expenses? And so I think that from his angle is really where he started to go, whoa, I don't know that I can do this. And the shutdown, people say again, like, well, why wouldn't you just wait till the end of the season? Well, when you're shelling out $10 million a week and it's not coming back, I think that's where he says, we need to stop this thing before I lose any more money.
Well, you know, let me ask you, you know, Ben, what do you think of, as far as the XFL, that they're fixing to get rolling next season? Vince McMahon's XFL, take two for him, obviously, the failures of it years ago. You know, you think this hurts or helps what Vince McMahon's trying to do? You know, Vince McMahon, as of recent, has sold north of $270 million in stock to fund the XFL. So, and Vince has said on the record that he's prepared to pump in $500 million over 3 years just to get it rolling. So for me,
yeah,
it feels like Vince understands, and I personally worked and know him, so I feel like he's going to try and do the right thing here. But he just hearing that sentence is different than what we heard at the AAF, right? If Vince is looking to pump in $500 million over 3 years just to get it off the ground, he understands, right? It seems that it'll stop. Do you think this, the unfortunates of the AAF now helps, you know, the XFL?
I think they were trying to be markedly different products, but at the end of the day, the entrepreneurial spirit says that at some point someone's going to get this right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Complementary pro football leagues historically have like almost 0% chance of survival. And other than like the CFL, which is the whole other country, it's a whole other thing. So, but other than that, everyone's tried to start this thing up and it hasn't worked for one reason or another. And I think someone's going to develop a league one day, and it might even be when Vince brings this thing back in 2020, someone's going to come back up and go, you know, we've got the formula and it's going to work. And that doesn't mean it won't be expensive at first and you hemorrhage some cash and then you know, at some point you finally start operating in the black. I think that's true for every single startup company, but someone's going to get it right. And it might be Vince, because the one thing he has that the AAF did not have, and this goes back to even when he launched this thing in 2001 with Dick Ebersol, is, you know, you have a pre-existing infrastructure,
right?
I mean, you have you had NBC Universal, you had General Electric. I mean, you had everything you needed to make the operation run. I mean, he might infuse it with cash because he can, but you have everything that you need to get this thing off the ground. And he's obviously a master salesman, marketer. That as long as Vince McMahon gets and shows that it's about the football on the field, because it really wasn't.
Right,
the
he
first
will.
Time
yeah,
around,
no, you're right.
Yeah,
he will.
Yeah, I think as long as he does that, I actually think he'll be in pretty good shape. I mean, it's nearly two decades later, and he can still use the XFL brand, despite the fact that it was a massive failure the first time around. I mean, that's how much cachet he has. And you know what? I covered the AAF. I hope the XFL works.
Yeah.
And I was talking to someone in the AAF, and they said, you know what? I hope the XFL works too. I mean, everyone understands.
Ben, we are.
You're just trying to make it work.
Yeah, we're flat out of time,
appreciate
brother.
It,
great
man.
Job, man. Thank you for the time this
Thank
morning,
you, buddy.
Keep up the good work, all right? There you go. Ben Kirschenfeld, CBS Sports. We out. Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.